The Genesis Communications Network is sponsored by the U.S. Money Reserve, your exclusive source for gold and silver precious metals. Visit them online at usmoneyreserve.com.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
It is time to recommit ourselves to that vision of a country that measures our nation's success not at the boardroom table, but at kitchen tables across America. Bernie Sanders stands for that America, so I stand with Bernie Sanders for president. And Senator Jeff Merkley joins us now here on the set. Also, good morning, good to
good
have
morning.
You.
Great to
also
be here.
With us on the set in Washington, national correspondent for Bloomberg Businessweek and political columnist for the Boston Globe, Josh Green. So I guess we begin with Bernie Sanders. And what, first of all, is this late in the game to endorse, or are you right on time? What was the decision process?
This is just the right time for Oregon. Oregon has a vote by mail. The
right.
ballots get mailed out on the 28th of this month. And so this is...
do you think he can win?
I think that anything's possible in a campaign. Obviously, the math is an uphill climb, but we've been surprised by what happens in campaigns time and again.
So why did you... Why are you swimming against the political tide and becoming the first senator to endorse Bernie Sanders?
Because this really is all about the person who has the boldest, most fierce vision on the biggest issues facing America and the world. Certainly that's true in terms of international trade. Bernie understands that these trade treaties, where we compete with people earning as little as $1 an hour, have done enormous damage to the leverage of American workers, have shipped a tremendous number of jobs overseas. He's fought for health care, the expansion of the federally qualified health centers was really his baby and the Affordable Care Act. He has proceeded to really be a wonderful leader for veterans. And certainly on when it comes to global warming, he is the person who understands that if we're going to take this on, and it's a moral responsibility for our generation on this planet, that we have to leave the vast bulk of fossil fuels in the ground. Issue after issue, campaign finance, he's been out there leading clearly long before he ever decided to run.
David.
Senator, let me ask you.
You know, he said something there in terms of moral responsibility and leaving fossil fuels in the ground. You know, this whole argument about, whatever you want to call it, climate change, global warming, global cooling. I mean, it's almost like a moving target. Because you've got to be in the flow of the know, and you got to be part of the, what do you want to call it, the environmentalist elites in order to be in step. And if you're not in step with them, you're going to be kicked out of the parade very quickly. If you think not, look what's happening across the country with professors and scientists that are truly pursuing science, for all that it represents, regardless of what Aaron Mayer, who is the president of the Sierra Club, would insist that 97% of scientists agree that there is global warming taking place, and this is regardless of 18 years of satellite empirical data. And this was brought out in a committee hearing with Senator Ted Cruz. It's like the inconvenient truth of the facts gets in the way of progressives because they're just so caught and committed to their theology. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what is it all about? I mean, that's my repeated question to the experts to go, okay, why would you pursue something that doesn't have veracity or lacks veracity? And it's not like, when you speak the truth, when something makes sense, you just go, oh, yeah, why didn't I think about it? I mean, it settles in your heart, in your mind. It makes sense. The whole argument right now from the progressive side of, global warming and climate change and that, doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't settle in my heart. And even when you hear something like 97% of scientists, you know, immediately that's a flag. I don't know that you can ever get 97% of any scientists to agree on anything, but somehow they've been able to do this. And then you find out later on that these scientists also say, hey, I didn't agree to that. I don't know. I'm not part of that 97%. So there goes their argument. Well, the discussion continues. This is Bill Martinez. We're live at 5 after.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
I'll tell you, with all the wackiness going around, it is a fun time to be alive, isn't it? Watch it on both sides. Quite interesting. And as we were talking with Bob Bupre earlier, if you ditched a couple of your civics classes, you're getting a lesson in civics now, like it or not. Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here with you. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Okay. And with us right now on the phone is Gabby Mirangiello. Gabby's a political reporter for the Washington Examiner, primarily covers the GOP presidential field. Gabby, always good to have you with us. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Donald Trump, you know, he was quiet after Wisconsin, but said, look at his handler said, you better say something. And his campaign, you know, sent out, a note that was quite biting, targeted towards is what he would call Lion Cruz, huh? Lion Ted.
They certainly did. I mean, what we've come to expect from Donald Trump every single time that he's lost the state to Ted Cruz now, or even to John Kasich in Ohio, has been that he is a sore loser. I mean, this statement that he released at the end of the evening on Tuesday really demonstrated that. He not only said that, he not only used his frequent nickname of Cruz, calling him Lion Ted, but he also said that he is a
Trojan
horse for the Republican Party, and that he is just trying to steal the delegates away from him, which is really interesting because when you look at Ted Cruz, when you hear his stump speech, when you look at everything that has gone into his campaign so far, he is one of the most, if not the most, anti-establishment senator in Washington, and he's consistently stuck to that message throughout his campaign. So to hear Donald Trump saying that he's a, you know, this Trojan horse of the GOP establishment is quite interesting.
Well, you know, you've been on top of this, Gabby, all along, and you've watched these dynamics and how these have evolved. You know, Trump is starting to see that, you know, with the field thinned out, you know, some of the establishment types have to make a choice. They don't want Trump. I mean, clearly it's, you know, it's like deja vu all over again where it was the president last election cycle, you know, anybody but Obama. Now we're like anybody but Trump. So he's kind of starting to feel that situation and see what's happening. And what, you know, even in Wisconsin, we found with some voters. And I think, you know, probably a couple of points at least worth of voters said, you know, I kind of like John Kasich, but, you know, I gotta find a horse here that's going to win, and so I don't want Trump, and John's too far back in the field, so I'm going to put my money on Ted Cruz. Is that what you saw happening?
Yeah, it definitely is, and I think the way that MSNBC's Joe Scarborough put it yesterday morning was really interesting when he pointed out that a lot of these voters, you know, they may have been inclined to support John Kasich far before the Wisconsin primary took place. He may have been their favorite, but in order to prevent Donald Trump from getting the nomination, they really chose to vote with their heads instead of their hearts in the fact that they supported Ted Cruz. Because as you mentioned, I mean, Ted Cruz right now has won, I believe, it's 8 states. He is the only candidate that's really outperformed Donald Trump in more than just a few states. And he's the closest in him in the delegate race. And so in order to keep Donald Trump from reaching a majority or reaching that magic 1237 delegate number, a lot of these voters realize that Ted Cruz is the best option to do that at this point.
Well, speaking of Kasich, Gabby, is he helping or hurting himself by staying in as much as that I see an expenditure of some political capital here and credibility, because he's really, in a sense, he's counting on what could very well be the collapse of the GOP party.
Well, look, John Kasich is really banking on the fact that the Republican Party is headed towards a contested convention. He may not have the delegates that Donald Trump or Ted Cruz have at this point, but he can, I mean, if we reach the point where we do face a contested convention and he is able to work these delegates behind the scenes and make sure that they would vote for him or support him on a second or third ballot, then he certainly could have a chance of emerging as the nominee. But he does still, I mean, with the existing rules in place, it will be difficult for him to get on the first ballot unless those are changed. John Kasich, I mean, let's be reminded, he's only won one state at this point, his home state of Ohio. And as the rules stand right now, in order to even be placed on the ballot for nomination at the convention, you have to have won a majority of the delegates in 8 states. So
exactly.
He's pretty far from that threshold at this point.
Well, Kasich came in late. He's late again because, Gabby, I mean, look, the convention's the end of July. All right. So now you've got 3.5, 4 months. If you're lucky, I mean, people aren't going to already start to vote within 60 days. Voting is going to be taking place. And Kasich is going to try. I mean, anybody outside of Trump or Cruz has got a huge job to do in terms of bringing the party together and going forward and going after, Hillary Clinton, you know, for the presidency. I don't think there's enough days left in order to make that happen.
I think you're right. It's actually, it's not just John Kasich that's having difficulties shifting to shifting his focus away from trouncing his competitors and focusing more on Hillary Clinton or on the likely Democratic nominee. It's Donald Trump and Ted Cruz as well. I mean, for the past 2 weeks, we have seen these two candidates go back and forth. They've argued over their wives. They've had this ongoing feud about the tactics that Ted Cruz is using in ensuring that, again, those delegates support him on a second ballot if we head to a contested convention. They're really not able to focus at this point on the general election, and I think that could hurt whoever or either of them if they are to emerge as the nominee, to not have already focused on some of these battleground states, to have been so consumed in the horse race on the Republican side that they've been prevented from doing that.
Well, it's quite interesting, you know, that we have a potential contested convention coming up for the GOP. We talked about this earlier, that the Democrats aren't without potential drama as well, right?
Definitely not. I mean, Bernie Sanders has swept Hillary Clinton in Wisconsin. He's now heading to New York, where Hillary Clinton is the Democratic favorite at this point, but Bernie Sanders does have a lot of that support among young people, young voters, and there are a ton of them in areas of New York like Brooklyn and right in the heart of New York City that might be inclined to support him over Clinton. So it's going to be really interesting to continue to see how the Democratic race plays out, although there is that looming factor of the math, the delegate math, and how far behind Sanders remains in terms of amassing super delegates.
Yeah, for him winning 7 of the last 8, 6 in a row, even if he doesn't pull off New York, but if he makes it really close there, do we hear the dramatic music in the background in that contest, huh?
I certainly think we do.
Well, without a doubt. And, of course, the GOP, in order to make sure that we understand what a contested convention is all about, they've set up their own website. I got to give Ryan Priebus credit for that. I'm for education. I'm for understanding what all has taken place. And there's lots of moving parts potentially here, but it's definitely worth looking at and, you know, getting some understanding. Like I said, if you're not going to get civics taught to you in class, at least you can get it taught to you in the real world. Right, Gabby?
Yeah, absolutely. It is important for voters, just first-time voters and those coming up in the ranks to be familiar with civics.
Exactly. Gabby Morongiello, a political reporter for the Washington Examiner. Thank you, Gabby. It's Bill Martinez at 14 after, the top of the hour.
Hi, I'm Joan London. When I needed to find senior care for my mom, I really struggled to find the right fit. Until I found an advisor, someone who had been through this before. That's why I recommend A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service. They have experts who will help you ask the right questions and find the right place. Call A Place for Mom today.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-437-5914. That's 1-800-437-5914.
A Place for Mom has helped over 200,000 families find the right senior care for their parents, from assisted living to independent living, even Alzheimer's care, and have local advisors that can help explain your options at no cost to you.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-437-5914. That's 1-800-437-5914.
Call today.
You know, we've seen these crazy diets to lose weight, right? You know, some of us have tried many of them. Well, at Bill Martinez Live, our healthy body weight loss system simply saturates the body with nutrition, bringing down cravings. It's been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Sweating during a good workout at the gym is a release of all 90 essential nutrients, leading to a further deficiency, causing an even greater craving for carbs, sugars, and fats. Diet and exercise cannot curb appetite, like saturation of mineral vitamins, amino acids, and essential fatty acids. Stop the weight gain cycle and lose weight the easy way with properly blended, specifically targeted nutrition. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com, Longevity, or call 855-305-8326. Fighting cravings is a losing fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, that's 855-305-8326. 855-305-8326.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Get on board with the Tax Admiral! Don't pick on the IRS alone! I'll cut penalties and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely!
We're an A-rated company helping people clean up their mess with the IRS.
If you owe $10,000 or more, then call the Tax Admiral!
Call 800-287-7180. Again, that's 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop. You save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
My dad was 59 when he collapsed from a heart attack late last year. Just this past August was when we spread his ashes on the St. Croix River. I loved my dad, but boy was he stubborn. He hadn't been to the doctor in over 25 years. His excuse? He simply couldn't afford it. He wasn't a rich man by any means. At less than $107 per month, LibertyOnCall.org would have been the perfect alternative for my father. Don't wait. Go to LibertyOnCall.org right now. For not just your sake, but for the sake of your loved ones. Again, that's LibertyOnCall.org.
I want to live this life unsafe, afraid.
Bill Martinez.
Hey, it's all about you, just the way you like it. And as if this is not enough, don't forget we got Mucho Mas on Facebook Live. Mucho Mas Martinez coming up at about 12:15 this afternoon. That would be Eastern time. And we'll be on Facebook Live and listen to your comments, give you a little summary of what we talked about on today, the anniversary and birthday of our third president of the United States of America, one Thomas Jefferson. Just about 20 minutes after the top of the hour, it's time to talk health care, and there's so much to talk about. It seems like ever since Obamacare came into being, it's so difficult to keep up with it. And, of course, our next guest, Twyla Brace, can help us understand maybe a little bit more. President of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom. She is a certified public health nurse. She provides commentary for the one-of-a-kind Health Freedom Minute, provides testimony at the state legislature, meets with members of Congress just for fun because she has nothing better to do, right, Twyla? And especially going, and they see, yeah, I know, just for fun, I know. But hey, and especially in light of this whole healthcare deal, you know, co-ops are unwinding. Whatever is remaining, we've been recently told, are on life support right now. Boy, I'll tell you, this whole healthcare system, I know the GOP has been talking about repealing and replacing, but there's many Americans saying, hey, replace it with what, and let's do it sooner than later.
Yes. So Obamacare is complex, particularly in people's minds, although sometimes I think we've come up with something called Obamacare 1 and Obamacare 2.
Yes.
So Obamacare 1 is what people know about for the most part, which is, you know, the mandate, the penalty, the exchanges, the ban on pre-existing condition, you know, all of those insurance pieces, maybe the narrow networks, higher deductibles, higher co-pays, higher premiums, all that kind of thing. But I think, and they've heard of the co-ops, perhaps, and by the way, since you mentioned that, there's only three of them that are profitable of the 24 that got started, and there's expectation that those that haven't already shut down, except for those three, might also shut down. But Obamacare 2 is the part of Obamacare that most people don't know about, and that is where our greatest concern is now, because it's happening outside of people's understanding. And so they're not even thinking about it. They're not looking at it. But in short, it is the way of rationing care through transforming completely the delivery of health care away from paying for doctors, you know, for the actual services provided, towards paying for doctors in lump sum payments and bundled payments and according to reporting of scores and all of this sort of thing, which is happening sort of outside the patient's view, and the electronic health records and the reporting requirements are being used to drive that transformation into really a system where the doctors in the hospitals will find a need to ration care in order to remain fiscally sound.
Exactly. Well, Twyla, the president insisted, Democrats insisted, there would be no rationing. Everything that he insisted wasn't going to happen is happening now, including this. And as you say, it's kind of happening in the seams and in the background. And is it any wonder? I mean, you know, you've got 2,800 pages that has led to thousands of pages of regulations, and it's like Obamacare is being written on the job here, and you know, on the fly. It's like, oh, we got a problem here. Let's try and fix it. We don't need to go back to Congress. This is all being done, you know, through HHS, right?
That's right. So there's 2,700 pages of Obamacare, the law, and there are well over 20,000 pages of Obamacare rules. And I went into McConnell's office and stood next to their big stack of them, and I was in heels and I put my arm way up and I still couldn't reach the top. So you can tell, you know, just how amazingly huge the stack of regulations are. And regulations are written by bureaucrats who aren't elected, and the majority of our laws in this country are written by unelected bureaucrats, and that's what's happening with Obamacare. So the rationing that you talked about, indeed, in the law it says health care cannot be rationed on the basis of these certain things, but that's not how it's going to be rationed. Mm-hmm. And you can say in a law that, you know, none of this will be used to ration care specifically, but the doctors in the hospitals who may or may not be able to survive according to whether they're willing to divvy out this money over a variety of patients or over a variety of care, they will make decisions. And because you are not paying the bill, you're not going to ask questions. And even if you do ask questions, you may find out that you can't get it. You know, I was in a hospital visiting someone several months ago, mm-hmm. and I overheard a nurse talking to a patient. And this nurse was saying to this patient, well, your doctor can't override your health plan's orders. I thought, wow.
Yeah.
See, that's where we're going, where the government
exactly.
and the health plans work together, and then the doctors aren't really acting as doctors anymore, and because you don't pay the bill, you're out of power as well. So we have to transform the system back to where the patients and the doctors are in control, and the patients ask questions because they have a financial stake in every decision that's made.
Exactly. Well, this has kind of almost become politically Pavlovian, in as much as that people will do that which they get rewarded for. The doctors have to do what pays their bills. And if the government says, hey, we'll pay you for this, we won't pay you for this, the bell goes off when they do the right thing, and the bell doesn't go off when they don't do the right thing, and they look in their register, they see money when they do the right thing, and when they don't, they don't, and they find themselves out of business. Now, this leads us into this next episode, and maybe a derivative of Obamacare Part 2, is Medicare's bundled payment program. And again, we're looking at a coercive experiment on us, the patients.
Right. So in Obamacare, remember you always heard about the death panels, right?
Yes.
And there definitely is IPAB, which will say, you know, this will be paid for and this won't, the Independent Payment Advisory Board. And that's true, but that has not gotten started yet. But what has gotten started is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. But take the term innovation and put in there research, because that's what's happening here. This center, which is being funded, established by Obamacare, funded by Obamacare, funded by taxpayers, right, is doing experimentation on patients. And when you look at the rules that they're announcing, they say that these experiments, these pilot programs, these tests will perhaps inform future Medicare policy. So they're doing these with the idea that they will not only do it for this particular treatment that they're doing it on now, but that they will just spread this across all treatments in Medicare. So the current one, which started April 1st, is on joint replacement of lower extremities, so hip and knee joint replacements in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And what they say is they are forcing 800 hospitals in 67 metropolitan areas to participate. Now, I know that the hospitals don't want to participate because I read the final rule, and they were addressing the concerns that hospitals said that you cannot by law force us to be part of this program, and they spent 3.5 pages explaining why they could, or at least trying to explain why they could, right?
Right.
But what's going to happen here is that the federal government is going to define an episode of care, and they're going to decide what an episode of care should cost. And then if the hospital goes above and beyond that episode of care in spending, the hospital has to pay the government back. If the hospital spends less than what the federal government says an episode of care should cost, the hospital will receive a reconciliation payment. So when you talk about Pavlovian, right?
Yes.
That all along the sphere of care, because they have no idea how expensive this patient is going to be from the start to the end, all along they must think about how to reduce every cost, because they never
it's
know
all about cost. It's all about cost containment. Twyla Braze, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us, as always, keeping us up to date. 28 minutes after the top of the hour. This is Bill Martinez. We're live.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-765-1480 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-765-1480.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember Pearl Harbor. Now you can buy, for the first time ever, the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-329-6700 right now or go online to usmoneyreserve.com. 1-800-329-6700.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
So wake me up when it's all over. When I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was fighting myself and I didn't know I was lost.
Join us online at BillMartinezLive.com.
Hey, welcome back, America. 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here with you. Don't forget Mucho Mas Martinez coming up on Facebook Live after the show, the after show show. And that will happen about 12:15 Eastern time. Welcome to join us and participate. Give us your input and get involved in the conversation. I don't know if you had a chance to see the reaction or hear the reaction regarding the Philadelphia Coalition for Real Justice accusing former President Bill Clinton of racism last week. Boy, I'll tell you, it brought up a ton of controversy. Last week, they confronted the former president, saying his 1994 bipartisan crime bill resulted in stereotyping and incarcerating blacks. And of course, the president, I thought he did a great job in, bringing some calmness to the situation and bring it under control to where a conversation could be had. Jenna Mulder is with us right now. She's the deputy director of USJAN. Jenna is an attorney with broad experience in successful state policy initiatives and strategies. She comes to this effort from the Pew Charitable Trust, where she led comprehensive juvenile justice policy initiatives and previously served the Center for Effective Justice at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Jenna, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us your perspective on, you know, the attack on President Clinton regarding that 1994 bipartisan crime bill.
Sure. Well, you know, I think that the crime bill has been the subject of a lot of conversation, and a lot of people have opinions about what it did. The only thing that the data shows that this bill actually did is it served to increase the size of government. It really didn't increase incarceration. It kind of added to that trend. It didn't do it on its own. But it really did make the size of government at both the state and the federal level much, much larger than it was before. It spent billions of dollars with really negligible effects. I think that's what we should be talking about, is why we continue to throw good money after bad onto this bill.
Well, once again, you know, we find ourselves, you know, dealing with a government whose ability and desire, and insatiable desire, I should say, is to grow regardless of the purpose and regardless of its effectiveness. So are we surprised that once again we deal with the unintended consequence of the bureaucracy ending into a situation? I mean, we have to go back and remember what was going on in 1994. You know, we had skyrocketing crime, rampant fear. The people are saying, take care of it. And this is the problem we have when the constituency overreacts and they look to government for the answer. And government gives you an answer, and even though it may be, you know, correct observation, wrong conclusion, there's nobody after the fact to be the grown-up in the room to say, hey, look, can we invest our money in a little bit better way? Would that be novel?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And I think that's one of the more troubling things that this bill did, is it said to the state, hey, we, the federal government, know better about how you should be running your criminal justice system. We're going to tell you how to do that. And they got what they wanted. They got a one-size-fits-all criminal justice system for many, many years. The states all kind of looked the same and did the same and got really awful results. And now, as a result, today we're spending $80 billion a year at the state and federal levels just on prisons and jails alone, and we're not getting the public safety results that we deserve. And so I think this crime bill, you know, again, there's been a lot of accusations thrown at it. But that's the number one issue that we should be talking about, is the fact that it made government bigger.
And, of course, at the local level, this is what people are outraged about, that we're not quite hearing, you know, the reaction that's happening on the street with Black Lives Matter. You know, I say, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's listen to what's going on. And I think the president tried to encourage that the other day. He's not been the best in terms of leading the way to hear the voices of other people, to hear dissenting viewpoints. But if we're going to get beyond this, you know, we need to be able to, you know, back off a little bit, you know, let our, you know, kind of calm our back nerves a little bit so they don't stiffen up. And let's try and listen to the other side's point of view and address this important issue, to where we're just not incarcerating people based on a one-size-fits-all, you know, federal mandated policy.
Absolutely. You know, we've got to look to the state, and that's something that our organization has been working on for many, many months now. And this month, actually, we're doing this 30 days, 30 states campaign to raise the profile of states. And it started in Texas, where I had the pleasure of working for many years. Texas, in 2007, really said, all right, listen, we've done it the federal government's way. It's not working. We're going to try something new. Mm-hmm. And so instead of building an additional $2 billion worth of prison beds, Texas said, all right, let's try some treatment. Let's try some mental health treatment. Let's try giving offenders what they need to choose productive and law-abiding lives. Mm-hmm. They did that, and guess what? Not only have they saved that $2 billion, their crime rate is now at the lowest level in almost six decades. And I think that the federal government needs to start listening to the states, following the lead of the states, and get out of this business of continued growth and prison expansion.
Could you imagine what would happen if they, you know, lopping off some of these federal agencies that are just absolutely worthless? And I know that's a broad brush statement, and I'm sorry to say that, and I don't mean to sound so hysterical about it, but I'm a return on investment guy. I say, look, if I invest X amount of dollars, I expect positive dollars to come back, not negative dollars. And especially for a long-term period of time where you can say, you know, somebody asked the question, said, well, how effective was that $1 trillion investment?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And in the field of criminal justice, I think it's a really important one, too, because, you know, around the time of this crime bill, the federal government started taking a lot of these criminal justice issues under their own purview that usually was something that the state should handle. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen this federal criminal justice system just grow and expand. explode. It's up about 600% from before the time of the crime bill. And it's picking up what the states used to do on their own. And instead, we've now got this dual system that's just kind of a waste of taxpayer dollar. And again, we need to be getting better public safety returns.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is that our founding fathers never intended for a one-size-fits-all government of anything. They were really sensitive. And here it is today, you know, on our third president's birthday, Thomas Jefferson, you know, who was attributed with being, you know, one of the major writers of our U.S. Constitution. I'm sure he's turning flips in his grave, so to speak, as they would say, when he, you know, takes a look at this particular issue specifically regarding, you know, the criminal justice system was never intended this way, to create another layer that would bog the system down and only confuse it even all the more.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I think that back in the 60s and 70s, the federal government was really focused on international crime, which is truly what the federal criminal justice system should do. But mm-hmm. now we've got these kind of interlinked layers of crime that could be prosecuted by the states or the federal government, and the taxpayers are paying for both. And that's the real issue. So, again, we think it's time for the federal government to get out of the space where it doesn't belong and let the states do what the states do best.
Well, what do we do? What do we, the people, do?
So the number one thing is to look at your state's criminal justice system. Is your state system focused on actually reducing crime? And the reason that you can kind of know the difference is whether or not your state uses prison as the one-size-fits-all answer to everything. You know, are you putting shoplifters in prison next to murderers? That's a huge issue right there, and that's when you're not getting the public safety return. Dozens of states have begun to reform their systems so that they're putting violent and repeat offenders in prison for longer, and they're putting the people that can be safely treated in other ways into other effective alternatives. Texas has done it. Georgia has done it. Ohio has done it. Pennsylvania has done it. These are some bright red states that have said we can spend less money and get less crime all at the same time.
Well, Jenna, are they walking away from federal money when they do that, when the states do that, like Texas and that?
Yeah, a lot of times they are. There was another mandate that the federal government passed a couple years ago relating to some of the systems that you should have in a prison. And Texas, for example, I hate to keep bringing it up, but you know, it is a leader on this issue.
Right.
Texas looked at that mandate from the federal government and said, all right, you're going to give me about $80,000 to do this. It's going to actually cost the state $3 million to implement it. We're not going to do that. We refuse. And so when Texas kind of stood up and bucked that trend, a lot of other states felt comfortable doing that. And I think the federal government got the message, hey, listen, if it's not going to work, the states aren't going to do it.
Well, exactly. I mean, people do that which they get rewarded for. And the thing is, you know, this coercive form of government that we have in play now, you know, it's just, you know, it's forcing people to do something that is against their nature and against, you know, a winning proposition. Well, Jenna Mole has been our guest. Jenna, thank you so much for enlightening us on what's going on. It's 18 before the top of the hour.
Social media or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too. Because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance. It's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24-7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At Bill Martinez Live, we have a healthy body blood sugar pack focusing on structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com, Youngevity, or call 855-305-8326. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 855-305-8326. That's 855-305-8326.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Serious investors and traders want to make 81% return in 60 seconds? Use the same secret algorithm professional hedge fund managers use to make billions of dollars of profit. Turn $250 into $4,903 in just 7 clicks of a mouse. Our tool is so simple that my 82-year-old grandmother can use it to make insane stock market profits. Go to richmoneyrich.com. Watch the free video before the hedge funds make us take it down. richmoneyrich.com. That's richmoneyrich.com.
From the Robert Allen System, current returns not indicative of future results.
Listening to Bill Martinez live.
It's one of these haunting songs, you know, you hear it, and 12 hours later, you're still bobbing your head, you're still singing, I know it, I'm sorry. Hey, it's Bill Martinez, we're back with you, 14 before the top of the hour. For more info on the show, BillMartinezLive.com, that's where you want to go. Don't forget, Mucho Mas Martinez, that's the after show show, at 12:15 Eastern Time. We will be on Facebook Live, a little summary. We're going to talk about Thomas Jefferson's birthday. Wonder what the third president would say about the Republic today. How far off mark we are, and what we need to do, you know, in terms of some sort of chiropractic adjustment, some political chiropractic adjustment to get us properly aligned with the intent of what our founders had in mind with this constitutional form of government. But that'll be discussed later on, so welcome to join us and let us know your thoughts. Get involved in the conversation. Hey, we're going to talk with Barbara Leeming here. She's the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, including her most recent book, Jacqueline Bouvet Kennedy, Onassis. Her previous book, Churchill Defiant, received an award from the International Churchill Center. Her groundbreaking biography of America's 35th president, Jack Kennedy, and her current topic right now is Kick Kennedy, the charm life and tragic death of the favorite Kennedy daughter. Barbara Leeming, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Hi, Bill. Thank you so much for having me. It's just such an exciting thing to be doing this particular book because it's so unexpected. It was unexpected for me, and I'm sure it'll be unexpected for your readers, most of whom I'm sure don't even know who Kit Kennedy was.
Well, she was exactly.
President, yeah. She was President Kennedy's favorite sister, and she died in a plane crash when she was just 28. Mm. She was the person that Jack was closest to, and what was fascinating about her was that she was so much like him that people who talked to me called her his psychological twin. I mean, like
wow.
Jack, she was somebody who wanted power and influence. She's tremendously, tremendously ambitious. And it was an extraordinary experience writing about her, because where she went to find that influence and that power is not where you expect to find a Kennedy girl from Boston. She went to England, to the world of the British aristocracy at its absolute highest level, when her father was ambassador to the Court of St. James in 1938. Mm-hmm. And the reason she did it, I think, is so psychologically curious. She was brought up in a family where Joe Kennedy had taught all of the kids that they were supposed to think of themselves as a unit. They were Kennedys. Mm. And yet, if you were a girl in that family, that could be very suffocating, and particularly a girl like Kick, who had so much to her. I mean, she wanted to be her own person, or at the very least, she wanted to be the top Kennedy, and she couldn't be that. Jack could be that. Mm-hmm. And so what she did was, when she found herself in England, she thought, oh, there's a big alternate world where I can go. And what she did was she decided that what she was going to be was a duchess, and a duchess marrying into one of the two most powerful historical families in the British aristocracy, and she did it. At the age of 18, the whole British aristocracy, who doesn't take in outsiders, fell in love with this little girl who was just, I mean, it's an unbelievable story, but what's so fascinating about it is that it's important history, strangely enough, because at the moment that she walked in, this is just before World War II, the British aristocracy was in the final chapter of losing its political power. And she went in not understanding this and staked everything on a world that was in the process of vanishing. And as you know, in the 1945 election, after the war, British society changed forever. They threw Winston Churchill out of power, and the British aristocracy, for the last time, they were no longer able to exert the kind of influence that they had exerted historically. And it was one of the things that was so important for me in telling it, because one of the reasons it's important that I've written the President Kennedy biography and the Churchill book, is that for the last 15 years, I've been immersed in the world that did vanish. And all of the surviving members of this world, the people who had been the key players in Kick's story, talked to me at great, great, great length. People like the Duke and Duchess of Devonshire, the last of the famous Mitford girls, all of the cousins, David Ormsby Gore's family, who became Jack Kennedy's ambassador and probably his most trusted advisor, along with Bobby during the presidency. All of those, that world, who were still alive, not only talked to me, but deeply, deeply, deeply puzzled over why this little girl had meant so much to them. Why was Kick for them the emblem of a world that had vanished forever? And it was just an extraordinary thing for me. Mm-hmm. It was seeing something that you don't expect to exist certainly not in the 21st century. It was like going back to the 18th century and seeing the very, very, very last traces of it. And it was an absolutely amazing thing. But they saw it as a piece of history, and they saw themselves as kind of as trustees of history. So they took it very seriously. I mean, it was an extraordinary experience to write it. And I think if you immerse yourself in Kick's story, you're going to learn about a very unexpected and normally closed world that's important, and it's important that we understand it, I think, because you can see how much war changes a world. It literally turns a society and human beings upside down, and strangely enough, Kick's story gives you the window into that. It's very unexpected.
Well, and most incredible, too. I mean, you think, in a sense, it was her destiny. I mean, here it is. She leaves, you know, the power influence of her father in the United States, and yet then she goes and aligns herself with an old guard power structure, marries a Protestant British aristocrat. She comes from a Catholic family, so you've got to know the Kennedy family was absolutely going wiggy over that process.
Oh, you're not kidding. I mean, that caused terror. I mean, the religious issue was what prevented Kick for 6 years, really, from marrying Billy Hardington, who would have been the Duke of Devonshire had he lived, marrying him because of the problem of the religion. I mean, religion was very serious to Kick. But I think even more than that, what I came to understand was that in the family, Kick had been Rose Kennedy's protector. I mean, remember, we all know by now that Joe Kennedy was a terrible philanderer, and Kick was the one who, when Joe Kennedy arrived at the table with his mistress in front of her mother, was the one who stood up and said, "Daddy, you should not be doing this. You can't do this to Mommy." The boys didn't, and when the boys would make fun of their mother, Kick would come up and defend her. And when she decided to marry a Protestant, even though Rose was dazzled by the idea of being the mother-in-law of a duke, I mean, that was really exciting for her. Mm-hmm. But Kick knew that it was going to break her mother's heart, and it did. And that was so hard for her. And then things got worse, because another way in which Kick is very like Jack is nothing stops her. I mean, she finally married this boy she's in love with, and 4 months later, he was killed in the war. And she's left a widow, but she staked everything on this new life. And instead of just stopping, and what her father wanted her to do was to come back to America and become a Kennedy again, she didn't. She made a life in England for herself, and then unfortunately fell in love with another British aristocrat who was even richer, who was a rival of the family she had been in, but who was married. And imagine what that did to Rose. I mean,
she just loves that controversy, doesn't she?
Oh,
well, I mean, she's like a living Downton Abbey here.
She is, exactly. I think that one of the things for us Americans when we're trying to picture what this is it is like, this story is like the last chapter of Downton Abbey, except it's real. It's actually happening. And you just can't believe you go from one drama to the next in here. I mean, it's a heartbreaking love story, but it's also just the most dramatic kind of history. And if you love history, I mean, I do, obviously, it's you just can't believe these things are happening. If you made them up and put them in a novel, no one would believe it.
Well, just, I mean, you know, the Kennedys' tragedy and association with plane wrecks. I mean, her brother dies. I mean, she dies in a plane crash. I mean, now we got, you know, John Jr. dying in a plane crash. I mean,
planes are not good for them. I mean, when she's 28, she went off with the one she wanted to marry, the second one, and they were in the process of going to see Joe Kennedy to see if he could put a fix in for them in Rome, so that she could get a dispensation, which was never going to happen, to marry this guy. And they were in a plane crash on the way, and she died. And it was, one of the things that's extraordinary about it, and to understand exactly what an impact this had on the Kennedys, when Kick died, they became, all of them, so paralyzed, nobody arranged for the funeral until her late husband's mother-in-law said, "I'll bury her. Will you let her?" And Kick is buried in England at the great ducal palace of the Devonshires, up on a hill in a little graveyard. And at the funeral, the only person who was there was Joe Kennedy, and the mother didn't come. No one came. I mean, it's one of the saddest stories. When people were describing to me the scene at Kick's graveside with that old man, they said he looked like suddenly a very old man in his crumbled blue suit, and he was crumbled, and everybody is standing around, and this girl who they've adored is gone. It was absolutely heartbreaking.
You could just sense the shock that, just reverberated through those families. Kick Kennedy, The Charmed Life, The Tragic Death of the Favorite Kennedy Daughter, book available at all the usual places, right, Barbara? We got about 5 seconds.
Yep, it's available at all the bookstores today, yeah.
Yeah, Barbara Leeming, thank you so much. Congratulations on the book. That's a wrap for us. We'll see you on Facebook Live in about 20 minutes from now.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
75 years ago, America suffered one of the worst moments in American history, the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Now you can remember December 7th, 1941, with the purchase of the first ever 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-490-3200 right now for the official 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve, the only company authorized to distribute these 100% solid gold coins. Remember Pearl Harbor with this limited official gold release. 1-800-490-3200 or online at usmoneyreserve.com.